Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Ann Garner, and I'm your host for the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen broadcast. And we welcome you. And on Saturday, we have our sister broadcast with Paula Thompson and Kristalyn Beek as co-hosts and or Diane LeBrec. Our guest today is Robert Burns. Robert, you with us?
I certainly am. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, and it is good evening with some of the folks that listen around the planet. So we're going to do a 40-second bumper with our dear friend Pato, and so that people who are listening live, Robert, can step in with us. And here we go. Take it away, Pato. New day dawning.
And I can hear the angels calling. Oh, yes, it is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. Oh, yes, there is a new day dawning. New day, angels calling. Oh, yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be.
Well, good morning again. This is Ann Garner. And Robert, you're sitting there in beautiful Southern California. Robert Burns, welcome to the broadcast, the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen.
Thank you.
And we'll briefly do a sound check. I'm checking with the chat room. I don't hear you quite. Do you have a way of increasing your volume on your cell phone, Robert?
I'm not sure if I can or not.
I hear you okay now. Just okay. Robert, looking at your bio, I quoted from the Urantia book, you can do several things as easily as one when you leave yourself out, and you certainly epitomize that, my dear friend. I'm amazed at how much you accomplish over all these years. And people can read your bio, but briefly, you're pretty much involved with the Urantia community. We'll start with that. You've been president of the Urantia Fellowship. How many years were you president, Robert?
I did one term, 3 years.
Okay. And then the Los Angeles group, you were president of that.
And I've served on that board for 15 years.
15 years, and a study group, a consistent study group for how many years?
We've had our study group going now for 20 years.
That's pretty amazing, Robert. And I've been to your study group, and I was amazed at how, and the knowledge. I mentioned on Facebook, which I love, it was mind-boggling. And we'll talk about the two different formats that you facilitated. Now, would you please give a brief synopsis of your business career? It's pretty amazing.
I have a health club that I started in 1982, and I've operated it ever since. I've run a few other businesses, some of them not so successfully. I've had lots of failures, and I've had those things that have worked. I don't know that it's a stellar career in any manner. It's just that it's taught me a lot, and I have immersed myself in business as well as a lot of various social nonprofit organizations, not just the Urantia Book, but many others. And that's what has brought me to my current view and understanding of what our planet needs, which is to emerge into light and life. We know that we're on that path. We can sit and discuss how long that might be, but we're on that track. And the Urantia community, really has the opportunity to support the fifth ethical revelation in helping our planet move to that first stages of light and life. And as I look at it, I realize that there are many avenues, but I'd like to list a few that I hope we can talk about. One, and probably the single most important, is spiritual. The things that we as a group, as a community, and as individuals can do spiritually. And then there's the social aspect of it, which many of these things are going to interface with each other. They're hard to pull apart, but there is a definite social need. I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And then there's the need for education and teachers, which any one of these topics we could talk a whole hour on. Then there's administration and leadership that that we can offer to the planet as the planet moves towards light and life. We have
Would you mind right there stopping? We do have people that listen, Robert, especially in the archives that are not they're new Urantia Boat readers. We always assume that light and life, and then we'll get to the financial aspect. Would you explain that, please, to people that have never, that just started, because I know a man that's listening today.
Okay, thank you. I do forget sometimes I'm not speaking just to a Urantia community that these terms are commonplace.
And they are asking you to try to speak a little louder. You have a voluminous voice, but that's okay.
Just remind me if I get a little bit too quiet. Just remind me. Is that
yes,
better?
Yes, sir. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Light and life is our planet moving towards a state where mankind it would almost be like the first stage of heaven to most people's mind. Our planet will be a beautiful place in the future. And light and life is a name that we call one of the stages of that. There are many stages of light and life. So as we speak of light and life, we just think of our planet being unified in its purpose. Mankind recognizes that we're all brothers and sisters, that we're sons of God. We don't have wars anymore. Wars have basically been outlawed. We just have a much more advanced society that recognizes God, but it's not under a particular religion. It's under the understanding that we are children of the Universal Father.
And you know, several religions, not just Christianity, talk about this, that there will come a time on the planet that, of course, we have our doom and destruction people, but they're just going to have to get over it, you know? And if they're right, okay, you know, what are you going to do about it? But we must look toward a better day. And I was on the phone with a doctor this morning who's done some remarkable research in this area. And he said, and as you know, Robert, this aging process, they're holistically, you guys are getting a handle on that, aren't you? And that goes back to your business. You're involved with some holistic medicine now.
Well, I'm chairman of the board of a department that's underneath the Department of Medicine out of University of California, Irvine. And, yeah, we're doing a lot of different research. We have some major grants that are looking in from things from like longevity to acupuncture. It's an integrative medicine approach, so we're looking at all the different medical approaches that will help mankind live better, and part of that would also be living longer, but more importantly living better. And I'm kind of steering it in a direction for the next 2 years. My chairmanship will be for 2 years, and it'll be towards epigenetic studies. So I've got a big interest in that. And then the health club, of course, is helping people stay fit with activity and properly doing exercise and good nutrition, all those types of things.
Well, it's marvelous, and I have a good friend out there that I see. I saw him while I was out there. He'd switched from mainline medicine to holistic, and I said to him 20 years ago, I think, well, 90, almost, that he was giving up. And I said, don't give up. because they'll call on you eventually, and they have. And even our doctor of 33 years has shifted a lot. He's internal medicine. I've seen him shift a lot. More of a, when you go into his office now, Robert, there's a screen that says things about how to take care of yourself. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, medicine is changing and growing, and what we think of as being cutting edge today will be still looked at as being pretty much archaic in just the next 20, 30 years. Mankind is advancing at an incredibly rapid rate, and of course we need to be able to catch up socially and spiritually as well, which is one of the things that the Urantia movement can offer a lot within our communities. If we get enough readers to get out there and to serve the various communities in which they live, to become involved in their universities, become involved in their nonprofit organizations, American Heart, Cancer, Feeding the Poor, and all these different things. And then just our civic and our schools. If we can get more parents to become active in our schools and they have this understanding of the Urantia book, they're able to impart and do a tremendous amount of good.
Well, you exemplify that. You're not just saying it, Robert. You're living it out, and that is the way we, as Urantia book readers and other spiritual, religious people. And I love your attitude, by the way. And we're about to, and you are definitely going to be coming back on the air with us, and because this has developed into a virtual study group. We have considered modifying the time. We're looking at that. We've been on Wednesday mornings because of the different time zones on the planet, but the majority of readers are on this continent, so we need to consider that. We're taking a survey. Now, we have a lot of people, like on Facebook, I have people that are part of many religions. Most of the major traditions, even Jainism, stepped in. I've known him for a long time now. You have a wonderful attitude toward people who walk in religions other than the teachings of the Urantia book. Would you briefly say that, and then we'll move forward? I've heard you say it now. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to go with that. Exactly. We all know that we're under one God, and so when people come in and they have their various faiths, even those that have a faith that would be agnostic, or they may even say atheistic, they have a faith usually in science. And each of us just have to work with people where they're at now and not take away from them, but to add. That's one of the lessons that I have gotten out of the Urantia book, is to do what you can to add to the person and spend no time at trying to take away, even if they're in error. Error will disappear in time. So one of the things that we can do as Urantia book readers is in the social context, and that would be our one-to-one, where we talk to people one-to-one, where we participate in study groups and conferences, large gatherings. Then also we have this ability to join in on Facebook or MySpace or Twitter or group emails, newsletters and magazines. We could write or participate in them, a radio show like this, TV, video, YouTube. I mean, it's just amazing the amount of social outreach that any one of us can get involved in if we so choose. And by our participation, we learn and we teach.
We learn and we teach, ever the teacher, ever the learner. And how many people, we have so many people that read this book, Robert, that are, have such a sheer intelligence, brilliance. And so that's what we want to talk about. You love study groups, the social expression of study groups. You're also a minister. And getting back, how would you define what we, since your unique position in sir, I will call it servant leadership. I love that role that you've played. I've admired it for years. Of the educational aspect of the Urantia book. You are an ordained minister, but how do we educate the mind and at the same time not leave the spiritual aspects behind of the ministry? Where's that balance?
Well, as I was saying, that, you know, we have a whole variety of areas that we can look into, and I feel that the spiritual is the top priority. And we can't teach something spiritual until we can only teach it to the level that we are ourselves spiritual. And as we participate in group spiritual efforts, be they worship or prayer or various social gatherings, the very best that we can do is that the average of that collective whole. But as teachers and educators and as students, because you can't be a teacher without being a student at the same time, we have a tremendous amount of arenas that we need to look at. And this is as the rancher community, but then so does the world. I mean, how do we go about teaching our children, teaching our teenagers? You know, the rancher movement's now 50-something years old, but we could do a lot better now in the near future on our approaches to children and teenagers. But then how about parents? What do we have? Is there things in the rancher book that we can help parents with if we were to so do that? There's advanced. I have a very deep interest in very advanced teachings, but not just within the Urantia book. It would be, the Urantia book speaks about things, say, in archaeology and science. We know that there are certain realities that are out there, but our science hasn't come across it. And we don't need to try to use science and so forth to prove the Urantia book. Rather, we need to know that these things are there, and let's go out and search them. An example, we know that that there was an Adam and Eve, and that there was a first garden, that there was a second garden. And if we were to be able to encourage those deep researchers and come up with financing that can help those types of researchers do this type of research, or things in physics, or my particular interest is the epigenetics, which is a social context. How does the social environment affect us genetically and pass that on to future generations? This is not genetics. This is what happens on the outside of the of our chromosomes. And I'm doing that by participating in universities. I just got in there and started to meet the researchers and started serving for them. And they're allowing me a little bit of an input. I'm able to talk to researchers. I have no degrees myself, but I'm able to talk about these things and get them interested, and it's beginning to take form. The biggest project right now is with autism, but I won't get into that. So down the road, you know, if we look at 100 years from now, I'm hoping that the Urantia community has a lot of individuals that thoroughly understand the Urantia book, but they're also part of social sciences, and physics, and chemistry, and biology, and archaeology, and all the major schools that you'd find in any good university. I hope we have a whole army of people that understand the Revelation, the Urantia book's teachings, and are so passionate in their particular arenas, and they bring that to the table. Those are the types of things that will help the fifth epical Revelation move forward in a very positive way, by becoming assimilated into the to our cultures.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of establishing business models, because I have been, and I'm participating in establishing a worldwide event, a Parliament of World Religions, and that is, quote unquote, a business model. We have to apply the business model of, and we're thinking in terms of 5 years, immediately. You're thinking, and I like this, Robert, because you are now the chairman of Urantia University, and that's a huge blessing for all of us because of your experience and your knowledge and expertise. And I noticed that the first thing when you started talking about it, you spoke in terms of 100 years, and you shifted my consciousness. And I'd already began shifting. You know, I try to be that kind of person, not to say, well, this is my absolute opinion. I wait and modify according to the way things are moving along. And would you, that's what you have in mind with Urantia University, am I correct?
Yes, I do advocate that. Of course, you know, all projects have short-term needs and midterm needs. And hopefully we're all looking at the long term. I'd say 100 years. I'm also looking at 1,000 years.
Great.
We know that light and life is potentially within about 1,000 years. So you break it down into increments, and you go, what are we doing now that'll affect 25 years or 50 years? And we need to be able. You were speaking about a social enterprise, I believe, the ability of using certain business models to help nonprofit in fundraising. And let's take a moment. The financial needs of our communities, of our Urantia communities, are great, and yet we're not very effective yet. We don't raise a whole lot of money, definitely not enough money to, at this point, put together, say, a university that has a variety of different schools. But we're moving in that direction, and what we need to be able to do, every different Urantia community group and organization, we've relied too much on the small donation and major gifts, and those are important. But we also need to be able to bring in things like endowments. Next week, I'm on the board of trustees for the Fossil Foundation, which its whole purpose is to begin the process of raising money for endowments, in which then we can give grants to worthy causes. So we need to be able to actively go out and get grants. Right now, I'm president of Free Schools USA, which is a world literacy project done with a lot of Urantians, but also non-Urantians, and we're teaching girls and young children in India, specifically Bihar. We have 40-some-odd schools, 44 schools right now that we're funding. But we've gotten some grants, so we're learning how to reach out there, get small grants. Jerry Johnson was able to do that. Susan Cook has been able to get us a grant for free schools. Urantia University is just now beginning to look at that. These projects take time to be able to do it. But then you mentioned social enterprise. And social enterprise is where a nonprofit organization has services or products. As an example, the foundation and the fellowship sell the Urantia book. Even though they lose a few dollars on every book that they sell, on the other side of it, they're not having to pay the total price to get these books out into the population. And so a social enterprise doesn't mean it essentially makes a profit, but it offsets a lot of the cost, and conferences would be one way. And there are groups and organizations that are working very hard to help other nonprofit organizations figure out how to use social enterprise. And I'm a part of one of those groups because I figure that our communities are desperately in need of it, and we can figure that out. And then there's a variety of other things that we need to be able to do to be able to raise the funds. But the first one is to recognize the fact that we need them short term this year, and make sure that our organizations that we'll participate in survive, but also 5 years down the road. And then I always like to try to get the groups, let's look at 100 years. What's it look like to us?
Well, that's wonderful. And I do want to ask, because people are asking on the board, there's several things that are coming up. And first of all, something about the Urantia book. I was in a setting last night in a very one of the mainline denominations, okay, invited by the pastor, and I won't say the denomination, and there was a group there from mainland China. It's okay for me to say this because everybody knows I went. It was at a Baptist church. It's okay because it's public knowledge, and I was deeply impressed by being informed, being directly informed of what's going on in China. And I'm very, very, very encouraged. And we'll talk more about that because I met the main gentlemen and women. There was some women. But right there, Robert, it would not have been appropriate at all for me to, number one, have a Urantia book with me, number two, to even bring it up. And that's where I believe some Urantia book readers, they go, first of all, I don't think they'd even be in that setting if they were trying to press the issue. Now, the pastor knows I am known in interfaith circles. I don't hide the fact. There's a balance there. And there are probably, there's some people listening right now through Facebook that we don't even see on the board. They know I read the Urantia book. We have guidelines in interfaith that we don't proselytize. And once again, I just wanted to mention that we have to be, if we start trying to superimpose, or what is the word, Robert? I can't find the word.
Well, it's superimpose or to try to proselytize our particular viewpoints, but that's just in life, no matter, you know, what we're involved in. When we try to proselytize our viewpoint too harshly or too hard, we try to take away from somebody else's understanding, we usually are ineffective. But when we add to what their understandings and belief systems are, usually then they have a takeaway that moves them a little bit further. And that's how it happens with us. You know, every religion has something to teach us. And I don't care how many times we've read the Urantia book, when we get around other sincere religionists or scientists or people that have passion and interest in various things, we grow, because, again, at that point we're students.
Well, I want to go back. Somebody's asking again, Urantia University, and we do have Pierre on the line. I'll bring him in. And Pierre, you there? Is this Pierre? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
Pierre. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all have been friends for how long?
Oh, I think it's been pretty close to 30 years, hasn't it, Robert?
It's more than that, Pierre.
Well, I love to watch y'all function together. It's such a just an incredible, I'm going to use the word yin-yang, because there's such a balance with your friendship, and I marvel at it. Well, this is stepping into that, Robert. And by the way, if you'll notice, when you're coming through this switchboard and through the computer, there is a slight delay, so it may sound like we're interrupting each other. It's going through satellite, so you guys understand that better than I do. The spiritual concept of ministry, because I minister to people every day, in different situations because of my ministry. Is Urantia University approaching that in any way, Robert? Are you just leaving that? I don't know. What are y'all doing?
We're in the beginning stages, and we're right now putting together a pedagogy and an approach to teach that will teach the Urantia book and kind of give certificates of completion that you have read and understood these various parts of these various concepts. That's the very first stage. But its vision and its purpose and its intent, the whole board, wishes a real university down the road, even with the brick and mortar buildings that have various schools that are around the Urantia book, have strong educational components, but also have very strong service components. And so, you know, if you look at the very best of universities, that's what we want to become, say, in 100 years. And there'll be a whole lot of steps between there. There's going to be a lot of wonderful people coming and taking over from us what we're capable of doing. I hope that kind of gives you a...
Yeah.
Well,
I'll ask both of you. You know, there's been several times on in the Urantia movement in these few years, because the book has only been in print on a relative scale a few years, and we're very young in that respect. Churches. I'm going to use the word church because that's the only word that I've heard so far. Robert, I'll ask you first. What do you think is time for a church, brick and mortar?
I'm going to let Pierre answer that more fully, but
he's throwing the ball in your court.
But the main thing is that's a social outreach. You know, churches can be part of the spiritual, but they're more of the social. And as I was breaking things down earlier, we have social, we have spiritual, we have educational, we have administration, we have financial, and we have service. These are like buckets that we can operate within, and all those interface. A church would be a spiritual outlet, but it's really social. And it has no more context to God than what we do individually. But we need community. So I think the churches are a good thing. But I'm not participating in anything itself that's moving towards a church, although I would support those individuals' efforts that would do so. You know, and I'm going to need to run because I have a business meeting, which I told
you. Well, you answered that question very diplomatically.
I wanted to say good morning, Robert, and
okay,
see you later after leaving.
Yes, and you know, Pierre is the one that Pierre and Marlene are the instigators of me participating in my very first early social endeavors. They got me to become part of the social services in Orange County. Ended up because of that, my wife and I foster adopted a son, and Pierre and Marlene foster adopted his brother, along with many others. But because of Pierre and Marlene, they pulled me into this concept of service in those early years. And my first 15 years in study groups were at their study group. And it was because of that that I realized that it was time for me to begin my own study group in Irvine. So, and Pierre and I have had the deepest of discussions over the years. And I'm going to turn this over to him because this program is in awesome hands. And I look forward to talking to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we will, as you know, like I said earlier, this is developing into a virtual study group. So we're going to need some strong input on how to accomplish that.
We certainly are.
And I'll see you soon, Robert.
You have a good day, Robert.
He hung up. That was it. Boy, when he says he's going, I noticed that at the study group. Okay, folks, it's time to leave.
Yeah. Well,
good morning, Pierre.
Good morning, Ann. How's your world today?
It's wonderful. It's beautiful weather in Texas. And now I know how much I enjoyed your part of the country for 2 weeks.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, you're so blessed out there. And, of course, being with our daughter, Dana and Eli, there's two Elis that live in the house, her housemates. I teased on Facebook, it was interesting. I thought, I'm in the house with two Elis, which is short, you know, for another word. Neither one of them decided to flash out while I was there. Chair
sure.
of the fire.
Well,
although the funny thing is there was a fire in her alleyway the night I left, after I left. And if she had not gotten up so early at 4:30, 5 o'clock to go to the gym, which she does every morning, those people in those apartments, somebody had thrown something in a plastic trash can, you know, the big ones outside. She woke them up, called the fire department. So
wow.
It's a beautiful place to live, but I don't, and they suspicion that someone did it deliberately. Now, and I've never understood that, Pierre. Can you explain that mindset that would deliberately set off the fires that y'all have? And we're going to speak it and affirm it that that's not going to be happening from now on because y'all have lost so many beautiful trees and property.
Well, first, California is a really beautiful place. I mean, yeah. The weather is always clear, sunny, just the fauna. It's just a beautiful place to live, no doubt about that. We don't have the seasons. Of course, I miss the seasons. I was raised in Quebec. There's a lot of people that have come down here because of the weather, and there's a lot of problems. The area has money, so you find a lot of the country, the citizens of countries down in South America come up. So we have a mixture of South American, Asian, almost every nationality is here. And we're getting along with each other. There are a few problems, but, you know, just give it time and it'll work itself out.
Well, we're just so grateful that Dana does get up very early because of the industry she's in. You know, they have to just call people in on set so early. A lot of times when the sun's coming, you know.
Sure, sure.
She saves some lives.
I wanted to mention that I have a pretty high degree of respect for Robert. He does a lot for the society. I mean, putting together this university. I've seen him get behind projects before, and when he gets started on a project, he just simply won't let go until it bears fruit. And so he's bore a lot of fruit in the rancher movement, and I see that he continues to do so. And this Urantia University thing is a very, very important thing for the movement in the long run, you know. So I'm glad to see he's got behind it, and I know that because he is, it'll get the proper financing, it'll get the proper people, it'll come together in the proper way. So.
But he's very industrious, and I don't think you were listening, but my favorite quote, I did put this on Facebook, both of you gentlemen represent, you can do several things as easily as one when you leave yourself out, and you totally epitomize that. I'm amazed.
Oh.
When he put his bio, when you put your bio together, I went, whoa. And Urantia University, when I was first approached, I examine things, and I don't always make rapid decisions. And so I had to see how it gelled, because it can be. I like the idea. I said this earlier. He's got a 100-year plan, a 1,000-year plan, rather than okay, today's the day. And I don't. There's a balance there. We have readers in the chat room that are saying that once you take it into quote unquote right now it'll be a virtual classroom, that may cause some problems. I'm going to ask you guys to. I'm trying to read the feed of how you say that, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, I was seeing one mentioning that we take it over intellectually, and maybe a school environment would emphasize that even more.
We have a tendency in the as the Rancho Book readers to over intellectualize, the text. Go ahead. I'm sorry. That's feedback. Yes, go ahead.
Well, certainly there is. I mean, we intellectualize everything, but isn't that really just saying that first we start in mind? And as we from mind, we find everything that we need. And then it becomes part of the heart, part of the spirit, part of the personality. You know, so any way that we can use and have anyone get started, as long as we get more and more people involved, and there's a mindset that grows that affects everyone on the planet. So to me, it really doesn't matter how you affect people. As long as you affect them and you start showing them what the Urantia movement is all about, you start showing them, you know, the beauty of what it says, its integrity, the science behind the Urantia book draws a lot of scientists and a lot of people who have scientific mind. So first you attract those, and then you, the people that are basically thinking ahead of a lot of people in the science realms really have a lot to do with the Urantia book. But next comes, of course, the philosophers, the politicians, hopefully will be involved. I mean, I can see where there has to be beginnings of people who just have no comprehension of what the science of the Urantia book says, you know. But eventually we'll have everyone involved. And that's, you know, so any way you can get people involved is the best way. But science seems to draw a lot of people in the Urantia book. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do. It's an either, okay, science. Now let's look at science, philosophy, and religion. I do have friends that are philosophers. And there's one powerful philosopher on Facebook. And I say that, he's also, I don't know if you can be an incredible philosopher without studying science. I just thought of that.
Yeah, one follows the other. I mean, you have to begin somewhere.
Now, we do have people that only read the life and teachings of Jesus as portrayed in the Urantia book. I mean, only. I've said in study groups where that's all they read.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Do you, okay, I'll ask you your opinion as a seasoned reader, a philosopher, a scientist yourself, because you really do have that balance. Do you believe someone who only reads the life and teachings of Jesus, the Urantia book says you won't get it unless you understand. There's two quotes, the sum and substance sum and substance of his life and teachings. Then it says you won't understand his life and teachings unless you comprehend the before he lived here, during the time, and after he lived here. So that's the question I would like to ask you.
Well,
that's a big one, but I and if you just your opinion, we're all we have is opinions here. We do have some people that think they have the absolute, but you know, whatever.
Oddity Ranch, a book, Science Purifies Religion. And today we're finding at this juncture in time when science is basically changing the nature, science and technology is changing the nature of life for us. Our religions are beginning to wane, and science is definitely purifying religion. Unfortunately, it's happening so quick that a lot of religions don't have time to change, and a lot of them are buckling. So I see this secularistic movement that has begun that basically ignores all religion, and it's not a good thing, but it's not a bad thing. It just means that now we're going to have to deal with a purer religion. And of course, the Urantia book came at a beautiful time when all of life is changing here on the planet in a very massive way. So it comes when science is beginning to purify the evolutionary religions of the planet. So I hope that answers the question. I get some thought on it.
Well, I'm going to approach that two ways. Number one, so can you give a yes, no, if people decide only to read the life and teachings of Jesus, period? Do they get the breadth and width of what we believe the Urantia book is here to embody in our lives?
Well, yeah, they might get the idea of what the Urantia book is like, and because of reading the life and teachings of Jesus, they can live a beautiful life and understand what life is all about by looking through Jesus' eyes and how he explains it. Of course, they miss the all-encompassing nature of the universe, the growth up to paradise, and all the beings and all the nature of life itself, and how the universe has evolved, how it's evolving, all the different architectural spheres on the way up, the nature of what the Father really means, be thou perfect as I am perfect, can only be seen by a long study. And to understand that study and that ascension all the way up to paradise comes from studying the first part of the book, the first parts of the book.
Well, I actually was asked to co-host a study group my goodness, that's been, I can't believe it, because I had a study group a long time, still involved. But this, I drove over to a facility, and all they were doing was studying the life and teachings of Jesus. And we started with his birth, and I was diligent to go every week. I was the co-host.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I really hate to affirm this word over it, but it was a struggle. Because we found ourselves having to go back, once we got into his teenage years, you know. And I have a saying that I coined several years ago, and I'm sure somebody else did. There's nothing original on this planet. I love Jesus. I am a Christian minister, have been for years and years, still participate in services. Was in a Baptist church last night with some of the heavyweights from China that helped me understand Christianity there, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. And it is flourishing. I don't care what the media is saying, but they don't want us to come in there and tell them how to, you know, they want to have this mutual understanding. Okay.
Well,
if we look, let me finish this thought quickly, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am.
The life and teachings of Jesus. I know people, that's all they know inside Christianity, and they live a beautiful life. But we're only talking about your intimate readers. I know people of other religions. They're doing fine. They live by love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, treat your neighbors yourself, and they are fine. But inside the framework of the Urantia book, if you read, in my opinion, only the life and teachings of Jesus, you're still looking at this side of the cross. You're not looking from the other side, and it's a totally different viewpoint.
Yeah, Michael of Nebadon is maybe Jesus Christ of Nazareth, but looking through the eyes of the sovereign of this local universe of 10 million inhabited planets is completely different than looking at through the eyes of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. And there's a huge, massive lesson to be learned from here. A creator son comes down who has created 10 million planets, and he's living the life of a simple human being. That's completely different than seeing just Jesus Christ and thinking that he's just the Son of God and that's it. Here's this picture that you draw that is expansive of all the works that has taken place in his local universe and all the beings that he gave birth to and all the inter-realities that take place because of that, like the evolution of the planet, for instance. He does mention it in the Urantia book. But to really get a good view of the evolution of the planet and how Jesus' life carriers affected that and how that grew, you have to read the first parts of the book to get that. And once you get it, it really cements the relationship that you have with life itself.
I like that. It cements the relation, and that's exactly what it did for me. It's like a void that was in, just a void that, and I love the Bible, I know the Bible, I was talking to the great Baptists, and people don't understand, I'll say it again, the Baptists are very independent, each church, I don't care, I know the Baptists, I was reared a Baptist, I'm still on the rolls, because once you're baptized into a Baptist church, once a Baptist, always a Baptist, you know? They haven't erased me off the rolls. And I respect that so much. And there's value there. And, Pierre, we have a caller, and I think you know who it is. Hello, 714, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Can you
hear me?
Yeah, hi. Sounds like Mark.
No, it's Robert Aponte.
Oh, hey, Robert. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. You guys are just doing fine without me. So I don't even need to chime in. But
well, that's
beautiful.
Okay. Just chime in whenever you want to.
I love that once you get it, you get it. I was reading the Urantia book starting in 1980, and for 9 years I read it till the light bulb went on. And for the first 3 years I had to read the book with a dictionary because some of the terms were so, you know, deep for me anyway. And I find it very interesting that what you folks are talking about is just so right on, you know? You try to do God's will today, nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. And like you said, and you were born, you were baptized in the Baptist church? Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I was baptized as I remembered in a mill pond. You know what a mill, and that mill pond is still there in the grist mill, you know, for corn.
That's beautiful. I was baptized in the Roman Catholic Church. And by the time I was an altar boy when I was 8 years old, I used to say the Mass in Latin when we used to have Latin services. But by the time I was 10, I guess 2 years into my altar boyness, I realized something wasn't right. And reading the Bible, it was beautiful. Some parts were too much like Star Wars for me. And some parts, just they were like, it was like a jigsaw puzzle that was missing pieces. I'm going, where are the missing pieces? Where? I know they're out there. I went on a search. I mean, I even moved to Israel and walked in the sepulcher. I thought maybe I should be Jewish because Jesus was Jewish. you know. And then I realized, no, I couldn't. When I went to the Yeshiva University here in Los Angeles at the 405 in Mulholland, and when I came up for the final test, they asked me to deny the Trinity, and I couldn't do that. I could not, for some reason, in my heart of hearts, deny the Trinity. Now, here's an interesting thing. When I was confirmed when I was 12 years old, you're allowed to take a confirmation name in addition to your regular name, your middle name, etc. And guess what name I chose?
Michael?
Bingo. So my Robert TA, my TA was working back then, and I didn't even know it. But I was looking for answers, and it knew it. So it kind of like, you know, just inspired me. Here, many years later, about 25, 26 years later, I found the book, and then I find that Michael of Nebadon is actually the creator of our local universe. What an amazing thing for me.
That's an important reality.
It's a very
Gentlemen, I want to give a quote from the board, from Mark. Y'all know Mark, I'm trying to get Mark to call, but he and David called. Mark says, "It's not what we think or how we live, but rather what we do or try to do." Exclamation
right.
point.
It's more like what we are becoming.
That
rather
is
than
beautiful.
What we have. Yeah, it
and
is
Larry, Watkins put a quote that, of course, one of my very favorite quotes that y'all help me, to follow Jesus, what does that really mean? To personally share, and this is paper 196, section 1, paragraph 3. Oh, it keeps jumping. I'll try
another way. It's a share in the good news of the gospel, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man.
To personally share his faith, and to enter into the Spirit. Larry, you're going to have to put that in a private window because it keeps jumping and it's hard for me to read it. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, Anne, I was just thinking, you know, I got my Truth Lover quote this morning, and for anybody who doesn't know, they can go to truthbook.com.
I love those quotes. I love it. And we are going over the hour mark. This is just too good. I love it.
They're phenomenal. And the thing I realized is, you know, the Urantia book is like a big, giant treasure chest. I mean, the tome itself is, 4.5 pounds? But it's like a big, giant treasure chest that has little gems inside. And every time you open it, you pick one or two of these gems out, and you just admire it and go over it and look at it and relate to it. And you know how you would turn a diamond and look at the different facets? It's the same way with the quotes. You can look at them in different ways and just get into them deeper. There's like levels. And I'm almost thinking this is like a Urantia manual.
Huh.
And I thought, oh, what a cool idea. Yes, it does raise our consciousness up quite another to another level, much higher level. And we have to think of it as you know, and like I told you before, Anne, you know, you've read the Old Testament, you've read the New Testament, the Urantia book is the future testament. If I'm not mistaken, it says in the book that it's written for the next 1,000 years.
Well, and I'm going to give you a Bible quote. In fact, I was talking to a long-time fundamentalist Christian pastor. This is totally separate from the Baptist church I was at last night. He called me yesterday. They're coming to visit. He wants to go to some of the big churches here that he, you know, the pastors here. And now he doesn't know I read the Urantia book. It would completely destroy our friendship at this point. And that's fine. But I said, he knows I'm involved in interfaith. That's a great buffer for me. And I said, well, you know, Pastor, it's the book of John, that I'm almost sure it was John, that said that if everything was written that, and I'll find that quote, all the books.
John 21, it's John 21:25.
Could not.
That's very good, Robert.
Oh, yeah, see. I told the pastors last night that I said the Bible is in me, but I don't always know exactly which. Spoken like a great Catholic that knows the Bible. And a Urantia book reader that studies the Bible. The Urantia book brought me back to the Bible.
Well, the quote says it. If all the things were written about Jesus, there would be not enough libraries in the world to hold them.
That's a powerful scripture. And a pastor that was on the air with me two or three weeks ago that had to be anonymous because his job would be jeopardized. He actually lived by that, and he's planting seeds in his denomination.
That's amazing. Titles when he was on earth. Remember, he was the scribe of Damascus. He was the boat builder from Capernaum. Do you remember those other titles besides?
Yeah, he seeded the Mediterranean, so that
totally.
There was thoughts there about, especially with the scribe of Damascus, or he went to Rome and he seeded the ideas with the Mithraic cult over there. And so you could see that. It was easy for them to accept the nature of what the apostles were bringing.
It was the cynics as well. One of the beautiful things is when you read the life and teachings of Jesus in the Urantia book, not only is it one of the most wonderful pieces of expository writing I've ever read, but it just rings true in your heart. And that's the most important thing. Yes, the Bible doesn't have all of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, and so they decided to send us a book that would help complete.
We're getting a little feedback on some stuff. Is that?
Well, I'm going to have to log out because I'm here in California, and I'm a lot further from you guys. But I love you guys, and I just wanted to check in and say hi.
Oh, it was marvelous.
Thanks, Robert. Sure appreciate that.
I've enjoyed the energy for 2 weeks there, and our daughter said, "Mom, you got to come back." And I said, "Well, I don't want to impose on you, but I actually quipped to, and I meant it. Somebody needs to rent me a closet, right?"
Well, they also have couchsurfing.com.
I actually rented a closet when I ran out of money at the university, and it worked fine. It was a walk-in closet, and it worked fine. You don't need a lot of space.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I love you guys.
Are you surfing?
Yeah, I'm going to
go.
I think it might be me. I'm going to go.
Bye.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'd say, definitely, it's where you're pointed, not where you're at. It doesn't matter where you're at. You can be even a criminal, or you can be whoever you are, wherever you're at. It's not as significant as where you're pointed. And all you have to do as a human being is turn and face the right thing. And you don't have to read the Urantia book to get that. That's the beauty of it. You still there, Ann?
Yes, I am. And, boy, what you just said is profound. If we have a young reader calling that you will recognize his voice. And what a perfect person to bring in of Dave?
I'm here.
Hey, my brother. Are you there?
Oh, Brother St. Pierre and Sister Ann. Oh, I'm so excited to hear you guys.
We're going to
miss
our music, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. It's okay. We'll be able to do it next week, that's for sure. I'm moving this week anyway, so it's a little bit more difficult. But, hey, I wanted to call in and say that, I just posted something in regards to this conversation yesterday on my Facebook page, and if I may be allowed to read it, it's a short quote.
No, we have no problem. We have plenty of time. At Larry's wisdom of keeping us longer than an hour, that's fine.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I had posted yesterday, it says, "The type of religion institution you and I attend is not nearly as significant as the attitude you bring to it." And I think that it's just an amazing quote because it does show that God is able to find so many of us in so many different avenues. And it's just wonderful that we're able to bring the attitude of searching for God, and it just encompasses our lives. And for me personally, I once I start getting into the Spirit, I can't contain it. as I've told so many people, my favorite apostle is definitely Peter. I love him so very much. I share his goods and his bads, but
Much like them.
Oh, well, thank you, Brother Pierre. I just I just wanted to share the fact that I've been recently having a lot of conversations with people from different religions, and the wonderful thing is I think deep down inside it just feels good to understand that, you know what, even if someone believes differently than me, even if they're not a Urantia book reader or a Christian or a Catholic or a Muslim or whatever your faith might be, there's still a reaching towards God. There's still the act of the child searching for the Father, and at the same time knowing that the Father is searching for you. I mean, that sometimes is all that needs to be known. And the extent of our knowledge really isn't nearly as important as the extent of our passion, as the extent of where we're going and how we're attempting to reach the Father. And it's just such a wonderful, wonderful life, you know, it really is. I mean, we have this opportunity to live, and even if today's our last day on earth, I want to know that I spent my day today speaking with friends and loved ones and even with enemies, and trying to do my best to reveal God to others through my personality. And it's just wonderful to know that I have that opportunity every single day.
Well, I admire you. I observe you, and now more and more I'm doing you like another Facebook friend that I go like so that I can, and you know who that is.
Yeah.
And so I can read the feed. And I'm telling you guys, Facebook is totally awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a blessing.
And while I was out there, there was a woman and a man that I met, totally separate. One, everybody's got to go to her shop. She was introduced to your Urantia book. I love the freedom in your part of the country where you can just say, you know, it is getting better here because of my interfaith work. I can't say the name of her shop, Kathmandu. And here I am giving a plug, but she's an awesome lady in Santa Monica. I know that's a little bit of a drive from you guys. Beautiful lady. Okay, now watch this. First of all, I went to lunch with a friend that I had not seen in 2 years. She is not a Urantia book reader, but knows about it. They're very close friends. So that was profound. And then Kathmandu, Rena and I became Facebook friends. Dana and I went to eat in a very beautiful little cafe in Venice that just opened up. And this young man, a young waiter who's, what is that word, debonair? That's the word I use for him. Very precious. Saw the light through him and the young lady. He immediately became a Facebook friend. He followed through. Guess what? We have two mutual friends, one of which is her and another one on Facebook. Now, look at that. That it's a world a world thing that's going on. How many friends do you have now, Dave?
Oh, upwards of almost 700.
I have a friend.
700.
I have a friend that I'm on an, what are we calling ourselves? Interfaith Coalition Committee. And we need a logo. We're seeking to bring the Parliament of World Religions here in 5 years. That's a huge task. You know how many friends he has? 5,000.
Wonderful.
And he has a similar thing that happens like you. He puts himself out there. He's a Muslim, and he's very open-minded, and he's a moderate voice that's coming forward. There are several that I'm friends with that are moderate voices of different religions, because those voices have to drown out the other voices, gentlemen. Don't you agree? Instead of
absolutely.
Us sitting back and just saying, well, whatever, that and criticizing and condemning, they're all evil, they're all da da da. Embrace those that are spiritual, that live, truly live by the golden rule.
Well, I think you bring up a great point, Sister Anne, and I think that when Jesus had stated that my sheep know my voice, what is Jesus' voice? Well, Jesus is the Spirit of truth, and truth is Jesus' voice, and all of his sheep understand truth. And whether that comes from one religion or another makes no difference. What makes the major difference is the recognition. And it's just like a muscle. If we keep working it, it gets bigger and bigger. And your truth recognition skills, if that's even a word, begin to grow, and you spread. And the greatest thing is, like, now, by just me posting quotes from the UB without even actually sourcing the UB, I have daily at least 30, 40 to 50 people asking to friend me. And it's amazing. It's really great, because I go to different religion groups on Facebook. I go to the Catholics, Judaism, Christians, Muslim. I go to all of them. And each one of them, when they post something really profound that I love, that I know is truth, I like it. I put a like comment on it, I broaden the scope of view for that truth in the statement that they said. Regardless if they're sourcing it to the Bible or to the Quran, I let them know that that's wonderful, that it is truth. And when somebody else recognizes that I'm doing that, it makes them want to say, hey, this guy recognizes truth. Let's hang out with him. And it's so wonderful, because Facebook, I like to call it, it's just like a TV station. If you see something on there that you like, you watch it. If you don't, you change the channel. Well, I can tell you now that Channel Dave has been rocking for a while now on Facebook, and it's all because I have love for people. And what I do is I try to focus on the positives on everything that people say. Even if they're saying something to me negatively, that negative statement, I can find something positive in it. That's my job. That's my job as an ambassador of the kingdom, to bring forth the light. That's what I'm here for. That's the only purpose. If I die today, I know darn well that I did my best to bring forth light at the moment that I'm conscious of it.
You know, I'll just say quickly about Facebook, and some people are saying that Facebook will be replaced by something better, whatever. However, my husband told me that the owner or founder of Facebook was on TV yesterday announcing that they're about to take a paradigm shift of the way, you know, making sure that everybody is, it's easier, it's more friendly, and it's more secure. And, of course, Dave, you're how old are you now?
I turned a young 30 years, 30 this year.
Well, and you know, my generation, Pierre, you and I don't know how old you are. I'm not bothered by telling my age, because, you know, everybody can tell.
Me either.
And I was
going
born in
59.
Well, you're younger than I am. I was born in 47. And 11-11, 47. So you guys get ready for 11-11-11. I don't know what we're going to have a virtual birthday party. But my generation, our generation, Pierre, a lot of people get really, I'm going to use the word paranoid, about privacy. Many years ago, I helped start an interconnect company for phone, one of the first phone companies that went independent. You know, when Bell I was responsible for setting up all the training manual. I was vice president national. We went national in less than 6 months. Gentlemen, I carried a butt set with me. Do you know what that is?
What's that?
No.
A butt set was in my briefcase, because I learned everything about setting up phone systems and PBXs. If I saw wires, you know, where the switch, I could go to that and tap into a conversation. You know, they have to have permission. We had to have permission. However, it let me know, are there any secrets, you know? And now, especially with cell phones and computers, both of you know computers very well. Are there any, once you post something on a computer, Can you pull it back and say, I don't want anybody to know that?
No, it's
certainly
not.
I mean, you could do your best to retrieve it, but you know, I'm a firm believer, though, Sister Ann, that you know what affects the part affects the whole. And once you put anything out into the universe, whether that be a thought or a type on your keyboard, it's going out there, and someone else is going to pick up what you're putting down.
Right. That thing goes out everywhere, and it's recorded and backed up. whatever you said even 2 years ago that you may have erased is remembered by the virtual net. It's someone.
Absolutely. How many hard drives are on the planet holding all that? I don't know. I'm shocked. I taught at the university, software applications. I was stunned at people thinking that whatever they typed went out into the nebula, you know.
Now, may I mention something here, that it's not just Facebook, of course. There's all these social networks beginning. We are at the beginning of an age where you could say that privacy is almost gone. Technically speaking, we will have very cheaply ways of looking into homes, through the walls. We'll be able to do all kinds of things that really invade our privacy. And
can you do that now? Because I know you were on the air with me in March? And you talked about the future. And people need to go back and listen to that. It's not the future, it's now, because you're on the edge of technology.
Yeah, soon we'll have walls. We won't use lighting. We'll have walls. And so how are we going to relate to everybody? With video, and so we'll see them on the wall because all our walls are going to be computer screen. But there's a jump taking place in technology where these Facebooks and those kind of social networks are going to explode and grow even more. I really don't believe Facebook's going to be the one to survive. It'll be there, but it probably will not be the only one.
Sure.
These things take jumps.
Well, that makes sense that it would not be the only one. Now, I am a whole brain person as far as the way I do things, and that's why I like Facebook, because I used the first PageMaker, which turned into InDesign, and Pierre, we're getting to your project of visual, because this is more and more a virtual study group, and I like Facebook because I can apply those desktop publishing principles there, not near, and bring in videos and so you're saying that it will go even beyond that, and I'm sure.
Oh, right?
Twitter. I personally
Twitter.
Have chosen not to go there because it's just blip, you know. I don't want to be that connected. I do have discipline of I watch the feed of Facebook, but I don't. Dave, I know you watch it pretty much all the time.
Right.
And
well,
we have,
my Jane
friend. Jane is a very ancient tradition. Larry, I don't know if you know it. Larry Watkins listening. Larry spent some time in India and went to the Jain temples. Manish is now a friend on Facebook. And it's changed the whole attitude. We've been
friends
for years.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's going to grow. It's not going to get smaller. Everything is going to evolve from this point. What I'm involved in is a little bit different. I've been into 3D for about 10 years, and I really believe that the next jump in technology, well, I know the next jump in technology is all about 3D. Not just the 3D that you see now where you wear glasses, but the 3D that creates games, that creates movies, and creates a way to describe what you're seeing in your mind. All your fantasies and everything can come out in 3D. And we're just beginning to be able to use 3D to change the world. Well, everything that's going to be created, how we communicate to each other will eventually lead up into 3D. That's why I'm so involved in it. And, of course, I created that 3D view, that trip to paradise that you can take right now, and you can travel around all the architectural spheres and see what they look like from, of course, my viewpoint. But someday I'll have people coming in and adding their viewpoint, which is Dave said he'd be glad to help.
All day long, brother. You know I'd be glad to help for that.
Oh, I love the exuberance of the youth. I love it. I love it.
Let me mention real quick, and I hope you'll be involved, Dave, is to show the migration of all the races across the planet in their colored form, and to actually be able to look at that and be able to travel in and out of all the different places where you can see all the evolutionary races and the violets and all the different races that exist.
So wonderful.
Hope you'll help, Dave.
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to make a point on this subject is that, we have these celestial, we have these angels surrounding us, and they see what we're doing with our technology. And bringing back to the point of privacy, a lot of us are very scared to lose our privacy. But I want to break it down, or at least recognize the fact that, breaking down of privacy is one of the first steps to breaking down self. And when we break down self, we are able to replace that with love, with God, with Jesus. And I mean, it's so wonderful to see that the masses are starting to come together, and we're going to resist. It's inevitable. We're going to resist because it feels like an impingement on our freedom. But once we realize that, you know what? This materialism has got to go. This whole, living for ourselves, this greediness, it's got to go. And it's going to happen individually. It's going to happen one at a time. And when it gets to a critical mass to where enough people realize that, oh, God, how many great things are we open to at that point? How many great, how much more of a revelation are we able to receive at that point?
I'm blessed. Steve and I have been married 34 years, almost 35. And I was telling him the other day, I love we give each other a lot of privacy. The man was older when we got married. He was 36. He traveled around the planet, still does, And we had to learn to trust each other a long time ago. And the transparency of our relationship is so important to me and to him. And he's a quiet man. He's a mechanical engineer. And we give each other a lot of space. Pear, you have a beautiful marriage. And you have a lot of trust in that marriage, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been married close to, I forget, almost 40 years now, I think.
I forget. See, that's such a guy thing. I forget, And Steve is not big on giving gifts, which one time he brought me flowers, gentlemen, about 20 years ago. He brought me flowers home. And I said, what's wrong? He's such a practical guy, But I'd rather have him be who he is. And he knows that he can't buy me clothes because I have, I'm very particular what clothes I do buy. And, well, Pierre, I still have the gift you and Marlene gave me a long time ago. You gave me a little wooden, talking about, and it's on my entrance wall, of special gifts there, like small pictures and something about friendship, about the heart. That even if you're not together, you gave it to me at the airport when I was leaving after we had a beautiful service at a church, didn't we?
Yeah. I'd like to get back to this privacy thing.
Absolutely, that's what this is all about. Yes, sir.
If what's going to happen? Essentially, right now, we're concerned about survival. Survival takes up the human mind. It's the main thing we concern ourselves with. What we're afraid of right now, and with reason, is that a lot of people will look into our lives, steal our stuff, and then go away and wreck everything that we are for a certain amount of time until we get it back together. There's also the concern about corrupt governments. There's all these issues that take place where human beings can damage your life by getting too close to you, by knowing everything about you. And that has to evolve slowly out of that. I don't think it's not going to be a jump that takes place. Obviously, everyone wants to share themselves openly with everyone else. And we will reach that point in light and life when we have where we fully share, or a much higher degree than now. So we have to evolve out of this criminal activity that we have all over the planet, and that's a very slow jump. That, you know, that it's going to build up, and then all of a sudden you won't have any criminal activity on the planet. It's just going to be one of those things, and so everyone won't be worried about privacy as they are now, but they definitely have a reason to be concerned right now.
Anything worth learning takes a long time to understand, right? Hasn't the UB taught us that many different times? It's going to take a long time for everyone to come together.
Right, just move slowly. It's, you know, we don't have to, you know, there are jumps, but those jumps come from the pressure. And they're important, these evolutionary jumps, like the one you're talking about, where everyone's basically going to be transparent with one another. That's going to be a major jump in civilization. And that has to come because of pressure, where hiding everything is not going to be very good. It creates hidden agendas in corporations. It wrecks different systems. So people do things on the side and all hidden, and you find that they're damaging you or the system one way or another. So hidden agendas are major. But these kind of things will pressure us into taking the jump. But it has to be enough pressure to take the jump. And the reason you don't want it to just slowly move into it without taking the jump is these evolutionary jumps that we take are so radical sometimes that it causes us not to be able to go backwards, and that's very important. It's like going through a check valve.
So, yeah, it makes absolute sense.
Wow.
Privacy is one of them, but there's so many different issues of the same way, you know. Yeah, so I see the concern about privacy.
Okay,
and it's,
you're going where somebody is very concerned on the chat, Questor. Uh-huh. Dave.
Yes.
There's so many Daves in this movement.
Two Daves make a right. Count it.
Oh, right there.
I don't want to forget before we leave the broadcast to talk about the importance of music. I just read another article about that, how it increases your memory, and how I love coming to your study group early, and you gentlemen. But we'll come back to that. How you have the band before the study group. Okay.
Every week.
Every week. And back to the privacy thing, there is a concern.
Yeah.
Dave, have you been keeping up with Dave?
Yeah.
My story?
Yeah.
I know that Dave he's saying something here. There is a concern. Of course, I've gotten over that. I had to let it go a long time ago because it's a long story. I don't want to get into it right now. And our daughter, younger daughter's a graduate of the Naval Academy, and she's taken, you know, she took a lot of courses, was going in that direction. A neighbor here is in, what do you call that, in that arena. And I realize, once again, that if we get overly paranoid, what about identity theft on the web?
Well, that brings up a great point. I mean, you have to be, it's really going to be based off of each individual's person. You know, if you see something that seems suspicious or that you don't recognize as a friend, you delete it. You know, it kind of goes with some form of common sense. And I think that really expands to everything in our lives. We have to be able to be judges of who and what we live into our lives. And I think what we allow in our lives is a direct effect of who we are internally. I think what comes into our lives generally is asked for either subconsciously or sometimes even consciously. And, of course, you know, there are things that are going to happen that you can't avoid. There are things that are going to happen that take advantage of people, and that's just the nature of the beast. But, you know, once again, the whole point is to leave the beast and to become less material and more spiritual. And I personally am at a spiritual journey in my life where, don't get me wrong, it would be horrible if all my money in the bank was gone and all my car was left and my PlayStation and my guitar broke and I had to live at my mom's or maybe didn't even have a place to live at all and everything was gone. You know what? But there comes a time that I'm at right now in my spiritual journey that I know it would be tough, but I also am completely confident in my father's overcare. I am 100% certain, without a doubt, that somebody that I have loved in the past will come for me and take care of me in a situation. And you know what? It's perfect. It says right there in part four of the book, there's a part where Jesus and the disciples come to a bridge, and at that time, there was not very many bridges in existence. And Jesus says, this world is but a bridge. You should not seek to build a dwelling place upon it. And I think, of course, that's a very advanced truth, and not everybody can easily just take that and accept it and incorporate it into their daily lives. But why not attempt? You know, I mean, isn't the one commandment that goes out, be you perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect? Now, there's a saying that I've learned in sales as well, is that if you shoot for the moon, you're going to at least hit the stars. Isn't that our goal?
Yeah. Oh, I love your fire, Dave. I mean, we sat next to each other at the study group, and I said, this is a guy that's going to take the Rancho movement different places, and I hope that fire doesn't ever go away.
No way. Not with you and Robert in my lives. I am really a lucky man to be around you guys, and it's just wonderful when you meet.
And vice versa.
Ah, well, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate that. It's just wonderful to know that, you know, once you fully submerge yourself in this life, I mean, so many beautiful people, so many beautiful things all come into your life. And it's like, you know, I pray nightly that, you know, the Father sends more laborers into the kingdom. And it even says in the book, by praying about that, you're more than likely saying, hey, Father, here I am. Send me forth. Here I am. What are we doing today? You know, where are we going to lead today that's going to take me closer to your will?
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful thing to hear. I've had, over the years, all kinds of people come in and out of my life. Some of them have stayed and some of them haven't. Some of them have stayed with the Urantia movement. Some of them haven't. And usually I find that the people that have the fire are the ones that get it, that get the Urantia book. And this revelation is extremely real. We're just beginning to understand the nature of who we are. And privacy goes into that, technology, science, all the things that are happening right now are causing us to look at ourselves like a mirror, like the spirit looks back at the personality or the being. This is what's happening now. It's like we're in a cabin and the lights have just been turned on, the cabin of humanity, and we're looking around and sure, we see black widows and we see all kinds of problems all around. But we're going to handle them. We're going to come through it, and we're going to reach the stage of light and life. We're going to find a lot of beauty. But right now, as creatures, most of us are concerned about survival and all the things that concern the human race as it evolves. But it's going to take that jump, and it's going to take that jump pretty quick now because we are going to conquer energy completely. And once we do, the human race will take an even bigger jump than what's happening right now with computers and the mating of computers with machines. It's unbelievable what's taking place. It is definitely a jump, a new age.
And I feel like there are a lot of youth. At least I have a lot of friends on Facebook who are predominantly Christian or Catholic backgrounds, and a lot of them are, you know what they're doing, without even having any recognition of the Urantia book, they're picking out the truths themselves, and they're daring to go against the older generations, where the older generations are telling us, how dare you discern what you want from the Bible as if you know what is true and what isn't. And guess what? We do. We do individually know. We can discern what is truthful and what isn't. And a lot of the youth are slowly rushing forward. I know that's kind of an oxymoron, but they are coming. We are coming together, and it doesn't matter what background we have. I'm an admissions counselor for a school, and I see new people every single day. I probably see at least four or five handfuls of people every single day. And you know what? I carry a card in my desk. On the front of the card, it says, You are appreciated. You make a difference to the universe just by being alive. And on the back of the card, it says, one God, one people. God is our Father, and I am your brother. The only price to pay for this liberating truth is faith. Underneath that, it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and in finding these, all other things essential to eternal survival shall be secured therewith. I don't quote the Arantia book. I don't tell what type of source I got this from, but I also put belief that. Contact me if you ever need me. We are family. I am your brother, and I give my email address. And these people are all from different faiths, and you know what? There's a connection. I see it in their eyes that they're like, they're hungry for it. They want to find a positive movement. They want to find something that's reinforcing what they feel inside, and not necessarily, in fact, far too often, the religions that we do have don't support that. They don't support the love for each other or the respect that we have for each other. In fact, they far too often disrespect anybody else's views or opinions as if they're meaningless, and that's absolutely the farthest from reality. And these youth recognize it. And these people, when I look in their eyes, I see right into their soul, and they're seeing into mine, and they can understand, like, hey, he gets it. And I look at them, and I say, okay, now you get it. And we don't have to even say anything. We just understand, and they love it. So I have people all the time thanking me, you know, for these cards. I give them out to people. I give out these bumper stickers that I make. The bumper sticker doesn't source the Arantia book. It just says, to the God-knowing kingdom believer, what does it matter if all things earthly crash? And that's a wonderful statement, because it forces the individual to realize, you know what? No matter what happens, it really doesn't matter, because I believe that when we go through here, we're going to continue to learn. You know, some of us are unfortunate. Some of us might live this short 70 years existence without ever finding the Father. Some of us are going to be force-fed so much by one type of religion or another that we just reject anything that we hear throughout existence. And you know what? That's okay. There's upwards of 7 billion people on this planet with 7 billion different paths, and that is wonderful to understand that and embrace it.
That is so beautiful. And I'm trying to think of the quote, gentlemen, in the Urantia book about the youth will rush forward if we embrace the true. I have my Urantia book in front of me. It's in the back, in the Life and Teachings of Jesus.
I believe it's in paper 196, if I'm not mistaken, and the Religious Life of Jesus.
It's a beautiful quote, and I'll try to find it while y'all keep talking, because two things I want to talk about, Pierre, is your project, because you blew my mind the other night when you said how many hours a week you're spending on, and then we'll talk about music, because I said earlier you guys sing and play your, and Robert's on the drums, and would you explain that, and then I want to talk about your project, because that, I wish every study group, no wonder most religious spiritual settings have music, and live music is better than CDs.
Well, if you want, I'll come back to my project, if you will.
Yes, please do, and then we'll end up with the music, because I'm going to end, if it's okay with you. We still have it on the upload, My Sweet Lord? Yes, and we'll end when we finish the broadcast, we'll end with that song. Of course, y'all need to record it again so we have everybody else on the song, right?
Well, you know what? I'm just lucky enough to be there. Pierre and Brother Robert are the true musicians. I just come and hang out, and I'm lucky enough they let me play. I'm kind of twanging along as it is right now, but I'm getting my calluses developed, and I'm getting and I'm getting the rhythm, and I have to learn how to adjust to their style, and it's wonderful because. Probably next week I'll be able to start going and playing with Pierre at his work, just to kind of get the feel of how I can maybe help out. And it's fun. It's just great. It's just very fun. That's the bottom line, I guess.
Well, it refreshes you, Pierre. And you want to, let's talk about your project. How many hours a week are you spending on your dual project?
Well, probably I'd say between 40 and 50, it varies. I've spent a year now developing effects because I believe that, I've created the interactive journey to paradise right now, and you can download it, and you can take the trip to paradise, and you can see some of the animations I've done, which I've turned into movies and put on YouTube, so you can actually see some of those. And you can actually see, kind of get an idea how the architectural spheres are all put together. But I realize that unless I have movie quality effects, I'm not going to attract that many people. It's when, you know, the human brain loves to see effects. So for about a year and a half now, I've been really putting my focus into the effects of the system so that I can present pieces of the Urantia book in a way that no other discipline can present. So that, for instance, you can travel to the Jerusalem circles, or you can watch in the resurrection halls how beings are moving from the center and going to the outer wings, or you can watch the three holy circles on paradise, or how the master spirits connect up to the super universe in a very animated form. And that's or watch the movement of all the races across the planet. I mean, there are literally thousands of things that I can pull out of the Urantia book. And seeing it in 3D so that it can be manipulated really does give you a way of seeing the Urantia book like nothing else can. And so I'm completely devoted to doing that. And I hope it's going to take a long time. It'll be several years. I'd say it's going to take me another 10 years to really develop something that is attractive. But right now I'm working on the effects, and I think that's what's going to attract a lot more people into it. This way you can understand the Urantia book, you know, in a very natural way.
Well,
does that make sense?
I love it, and I've seen your – I saw 2 years ago. It's been almost 2 years, right, in the summer. Saw the rendering of it, and then as you went along. And for me – I am a very I'm a very visual person. Also, I am trained in accounting, so it's interesting. When I see it visually, I still struggle with the movement of the different races on the planet. My mind doesn't I can't get it through a linear. For some reason, that part of the book, but that's why we all need each other.
That's exactly why I'm doing it. A picture may tell a thousand words, but a three-dimensional movie animation that you can manipulate and change where it goes and how it goes literally tells it far more repletely than, say, just a picture. So to be able to take a bar and move backwards and forward and watch the races where, you know, you take a slider and you slide back and you see it, all the races coming back, so you go backward in time and see, you know, so you can go forward and backwards of all these animations and these 3D environments that show you exactly what happened. And then it becomes consistent. And that's one thing about the Urantia book. It's extremely consistent. So when you put these things in the 3D, and 3D does purify the way you look at all this information. It really brings about it. You have to be very disciplined in the way you look at the Urantia book simply to be able to put it into a 3D form. And so it changes the way you look at the Urantia book. It really opens it up like nothing else can. So obviously I'm 100% committed to it.
Well, let me ask you a question, because the bits and pieces, I'm thinking of Saskia did a chart, and in the past there's others that did things. Even Bill Sadler Jr. did some things, and then at those big expos, Paul and I would meet people that didn't know any of us that had done charts in those,
right,
those history of the planet especially. Of course, I've done a lot of study guides and use visuals, but nothing like this. Is there any way you could do bits of it so we could use it with these virtual study groups that we're doing now, on not only here on Blog Talk Radio, and we're so appreciative of Blog Talk Radio, and then Facebook, of that as we bring forth the reading, we haven't decided yet, sequential or probably topical would be better in this setting, and you really will play a role in that, because how are we going to explain, for example, the forward? How are we going to do that?
Well, now I'm having some real problems, some real issues on how do I present, say, in a consistent way, the interconnections between all the beings from here to paradise. It's something I haven't wrapped my mind around yet, and I'm hoping that I will get some information from as many people as I can to be able to present in a interconnected form on screen something that would show all the beings and their interconnections and how to communicate with one another. And sometimes you can get a glimpse of it, but boy, if that can be presented on in a 3D form, then all the people that have asked me about all these beings would have a way to be able to understand this fantastic communication that takes place between all the beings in time and space in paradise.
Well, I have a friend, a longtime friend, that was on the air last week. She's a trained nun, Catholic nun, and pioneer in interfaith. And she has read the Urantia book, and I love this. She said, well, I don't consider myself a reader. But she said, I only read it completely all the way through without stopping 3 hours every morning twice. And I, you know what? How many readers have done that, Pierre? You know, the discipline that she brought to the table. And she had a lot of sage advice to us. I love that she is, quote-unquote, not a reader. She has a deep respect. But she said the forward was like chewing chalk. I love that
analogy.
Well,
I'd love to present it.
She actually called me early one morning, because she would get up at 4 every morning. That's the discipline of a Catholic nun. And would read it, you know, early in the morning hours when it's that stillness. And she called me very early, and she said, Anne, she calls me Annie, you know, my dearest friend. And I'll throw that out there that very few people, but there's something about they get to a certain place with me, women call me that. And the man introduced me to the book. Chalk. So we've got to take it from chalk to a very palatable, visual, vibrant.
Right.
The forward is the entire Urantia book.
Well, there's. I'm going to get back to some of the technical details. The human brain does not like to think in 2D very much. It has to do a conversion from 2D to 3D because it basically thinks in 3D. So. Watching a movie is a beautiful thing. You can see the beginning all the way to the end, but it's a sequence, and it's a very controlled sequence. The thing about 3D is that you can take the direction where your mind comprehends it the most. For instance, one part of the forward may be seen a particular way, and the other part of the forward would be seen a completely different way, and you want to be able to give that to a human being. You want to give them the chance to be able to go in the direction that they would understand the best. So they may take the forward from a completely different approach. So that's the power of 3D, is to give the ability to create your own movie. And obviously I did that as part of the system where you can take any 3D view that's been created, you know, and then you can manipulate it any way you want and make a movie out of it. But a movie is just one sequence through an extremely complex environment. And here, doing 3D gives you the entire complex environment. Now, how would I do the absolute sort of 7 levels of perfection and all the things that exist in the forward? That is a work that will probably take several hundred years to accomplish properly.
Absolutely.
One guy.
Brother Dave is making an interesting comment on the board that the forward, the Roberts laughed at Sadler Jr., you know. Because I have read, listened to his quote-unquote simplification, you know. And,
yeah.
And each one of us, I think each one of us need to do that. I made the statement, I actually have the forward outlined in an Excel spreadsheet, the entire forward. And when I say outlined, it's not just, it's hard to explain because I turn Excel almost, I did turn Excel into a desktop publisher.
Uh-huh.
With even visuals. But the next step, right now the forward is totally in Excel spreadsheet. It's hard to explain.
Wow.
I have not, what do you call it, put it out there. I need to go ahead because I love it. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's the way the headings are and everything. And it really brought it home for me. And I have a good friend I've been over there. He was my mentor on the forward for many years. He's a trained Cistercian Catholic monk. And his mind is so brilliant. He has created hundreds of charts of the Urantia book, including the forward. Can you believe that? Like scrolls that go all the way around the room made out of giant paper. The entire
room. Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm going to hook you up with him. He's 80 now, and he needs somebody to take it to the next level.
Now, obviously, I cannot by myself do all of this work. But what I can do is create the platform that allows us to be able to take pieces of the Urantia book and put it into this platform so that other people can see it. And I've done it in such a way that it's not like the 3D studio and all these things that create movies and games today. And that has a very important, it's been very important. That's helped us get to where we're at. But I believe that the machine is just being born right now where we can have like centralized areas that exist in virtual space where all of us can put in our view of the Urantia book so that we can see it through everyone else's eyes also. And it's not just about one person creating a view that can be understood. It's about how everyone can input and put their fantasy and put their view of what the Urantia book looks like so that someone else can understand it immediately. And all these central repositories of education are just now being born. And right now they're just in 2D form, like Google's taking books and they're putting it up there so that you can read the books. But Wiki is a good beginning, but it is still 2D text. There's going to be visualization systems that are being born right now that are going to change the way we look at everything so that a human being in 5 minutes can learn more than a person has seen in, say, 5 years of study, just by looking and manipulating these 3D worlds. Does that make sense?
Yes. It makes perfect, absolute sense.
So driven as I am to make this work, I want to see the Urantia book in 3D. I want to be able to get more humans involved and start putting their views, their fantasies, and make it easy for them to be able to create these worlds that they're seeing inside of their minds into a place that can be seen by everyone. So it's my own form of university, if you will.
Well, you're on board with Urantia University now, sort of?
Well, I'm behind Robert 100%, of course. You know, I mean, this Urantia University will help change the planet. It's going to be a central repository of all the thinkers who understand the nature of life. And it's a thing that's going to grow. And if you're looking at it through the Urantia book, of course, you can see it in a very different way than traditional science sees it today. There's going to be a lot of conflicts. Like, for instance, the Big Bang doesn't exist in the Urantia book, you know.
Well,
stuff
and
like
you
that.
Say it doesn't exist, but is there any way to reconcile the two? I'll use that term from a scientific standpoint.
No, not really, except to say, well, the time and space had a beginning, but God knows that beginning started trillions and trillions and trillions of years ago instead of just, say, 13 billion years ago.
I guess that's the reconciliation that they put. Would it help if they broadened the time frame? Are they y'all?
No, because the Big Bang presupposes a cause that is strictly physical. And
yes.
And so the Urantia book does not give the cause of time space as anything physical. It describes the master architects and the father and all the beings that were involved in creating time and space. So it's very replete. While the Big Bang is very simple, it just says the universe started from something that was less than a quarter of an inch in size, and boom, there it all is. This is life came from this unfathomable, unknowable place. And it's a good beginning, but certainly it would definitely conflict with the Urantia book outright, you know, because the Urantia book has a presupposition that the universe or time and space was built by beings, that it didn't just come about because of some physical event that took place 13 billion years ago. Does that
make
sense?
Main thrust behind the Big Bang Theory are physicists who do not believe in a first source and center. Am I correct?
I'm
thankful for the physicists that are saying, whoa, wait a minute. What's this gentleman's name in the wheelchair?
Hawkins?
Yes.
Hawkins?
I guess he's still an atheist, agnostic.
Uh-huh.
And somebody we know personally gave him the Urantia book. I can't remember. Somebody in your area, and he just, I don't know what he did with it. It doesn't sound like he gave it. I don't know. But that's fine. We need that balance, you know, of the great minds on the planet, the think tank.
There's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to being force-fed religion when you're young, and then grappling science, and then science shows in their minds that there is no such thing as God, that there's no such thing as eternity, from a Bible or Urantia book viewpoint. And science caused this action against simple-minded religions. But that's just the beginning. I think that it will change over time as all these people begin to realize that there's more to life than just science. There's being. We are. It's very tough to explain. There's no comprehension on the physical level that can explain why we are beings, or a lot of the philosophies cannot be explained with mere elements. And so it's going to attract people up into the higher thinking again. But scientists right now, generally, a lot of them have a tendency to reject God as even an idea, you know, or a concept.
Why do you think that is? Why do scientists struggle with that?
Well, because we are in the age of analysis still. Well, we've taken a jump right now into the age of synthesis. Analysis is born out of decomposing a system. So we take the human, the planet or the universe, and we keep decomposing it, taking it apart into more and more details until we get down to the basic elements, and then even further. So we we begin to believe that all of life is based on atoms or the particles that make up atoms. There's no God there. So science is directly focused into looking at the cause of life on the physical level. They haven't found anything that proves anything beyond this atomic structure. So it's a very simple thing for them to just say, well, there is no God, there is no being, that all of life is based on atoms or elements. And I can prove that. It's right in front of us. I can have a scientific experiment that I can repeat, and it says, where's God in all this? And that's understandable from their viewpoint. It's just that it doesn't explain why we are. Now, you can look in the mirror and say, why am I a being? And you can answer yourself and say, well, I know that I am, but I can't tell you why. I can't say that an element or a molecule or a combination has caused us to be beings. But we recognize it and we know it, but we can't explain it elementally. So that kind of thinking will start taking place, and we'll come back to some sanity, if you will. But right now there's a knee-jerk reaction against these simpler views of religion, where, you know, religions of fear that have dominated the planet for so long and still dominate.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Fear. Yes, it does make sense. You know, Pierre, you've always made sense to me. It's incredible, because when I'm interacting with you, and I remember we were walking to Dana's place before they moved to the house. You know what I'm talking about, from the first house. And you were speaking a vision to me of what you saw and how you saw it. And I totally got it, and I couldn't explain why. I was like, I get that. I came home, and I have a habit with my husband, either on the phone or verbally in person, and I am so grateful for this man. Last night when I got in, I had taken prolific notes with these Chinese Baptist gentlemen. I got a whole other viewpoint. You can't get it unless there's from them. Lots of misunderstanding that cleared up. And Steve sat there, and he wanted to hear it, and I didn't look at my notes. Why do I do that? Number one, I need him as a witness in my reactions. Number two, though, what's that doing, Pierre? It's creating the memory patterns in my mind. I immediately called him when you talked to me that day, and I went through it immediately with him. You didn't know this. I got into Dana's house and wrote notes of what you said.
Well,
so we're really depending on you and others like you. Watkins is our engineer, and Brother Dave, he's very loyal, and the other Questor, very loyal every week to this broadcast. And this is a different time to bring the broadcast. We've talked about different times, but it's more ideal to have at the same time as the Saturday show, and we want to invite everybody to come back Saturday at 11 o'clock with Paula and her co-host Crystalyn Larson and or Diane LeBrec. And we have different flavors, and I love that. I love that.
Well, I did want to mention, I'm getting,
can you believe we're down to 3 minutes? 2 minutes.
Yeah, I got a feeling that it's time to wrap up. I just wanted to say that being is the most beautiful thing that has, it's the only gift that comes directly from the Father. Everything else is created by all the other beings underneath him. The one gift is being, personality. And that gift, if you concentrate on it long enough to realize that you are a being, you'll reach that place where you're worshiping, because it is such a fantastic thing to be a being.
You know, I just entered worship when you just spoke those words, and because of my studying and experiential understanding of worship, I just entered worship right there. Because, you know, that's a whole nother lesson about people think, oh, I have to work at worship. No, boom, it's not us that does it. It's the spirit within, the adjuster. All we do is agree to worship, and boom.
Just look at yourself. Stop long enough to realize who you are, and look at the fact that you are a being, and recognize just how beautiful that is. And then you've connected directly to the Father.
We just did it, and we're going to end with you singing My Sweet Lord in the archives. People will hear the entire song. I'll see you again in Southern California.
Thanks, Anna.
God bless everybody. Thank you, Pierre. I genuinely love you, dear brother, and
I love
your precious
you too.
Wife. Bye, my sweet Lord.
Bye, Ann.
Bye.
Thank you, dear brother.